Chapter 10 Sangha Vidya on Society. We record in this, the 10th chapter, the conversation between Yati Yoganatha and Maharshi Ramana, which will rejoice society. Yoganatha: O great sage, what is the relation between society and its members? Lord, be pleased to explain this for the Shreyas, that is, progressive improvement of society. Bhagavan: In a society consisting of followers of diverse ways of life, O best of sadhus, society is like the body and the members like its limbs. O ascetic, a member prospers by working for the good of society like a limb serving the body. Through mind, speech and body, one should always conduct oneself so as to serve the interests of society and should also awaken his circle to do likewise. One should build up one's own circle so as to serve the interests of society and then make it prosper so that the society itself may prosper. Yoganatha: Among the wise, some extol shanti, peace, others shakti, power. Which of these, O Lord, is the better means for promoting the well-being of society? Bhagavan: Shanti is for purifying one's own mind, shakti for the progress of society. Society should be raised through shakti and then shanti established. Yoganatha: O great sage, what is the supreme goal on earth to be attained by human society as a whole? Bhagavan: Brotherhood based on a sense of equality is the supreme goal to be attained by human society as a whole. Through brotherhood, supreme peace will prevail among mankind and then this entire planet will flourish like a single household. This conversation between Yoganatha, the ascetic, and the gracious Maharshi took place on the 15th August 1917. End of chapter 10 with 12 verses. Chapter 11 Jnana Siddhi Samarasam on compatibility of Jnana and Siddhis. On the night of the 16th, when he was alone, I approached the Guru, the great sage, the most eminent of the enlightened, who always abides in the self, the illustrious Ramana, now in human form, and sang his praises so as to be blessed with jnana hard to gain. In you alone are found supreme abidance in the self and the clearest intellect. You are the repository of all knowledge, even as the ocean is of all waters. Oh, far famed in boyhood itself, in your 17th year you gained the experience of the self, inaccessible even to the yogis. Who can describe, O Lord, your state of being in which all these visible objects appear as mere shadows? To those drowning in this terrible samsara, tossed hither and thither, and struggling to cross this great suffering, you alone are the sovereign refuge. O Brahman, through God-given vision, I behold you again and again as Subrahmanya, the best of Brahmanyas in human form. Lord, not on Swami Malai, nor in Tiruthani Hill, nor on top of Venkatachala, do you now dwell. In reality, you are in Arunachala. O Lord, you taught in ancient days the secret Bhumavidya, knowledge of the ground of being, to Maharshi Narada, who served you as a disciple. Those learned in the Vedas say you are Brahmarishi, Sanat Kumara. Those learned in the Agamas acclaim you as Subrahmanya, the chief of gods. Only the names differ, not the person, Sanat Kumara and Skanda are in reality but synonymous for you. Once before, born as Kumarila, the best of Brahmins, you re-established the Dharma propounded in the Vedas. O Bhagavan, when Jains caused confusion in the Dharma, you came down as Jnana Sambandha in Dravida Desha and established the path of devotion. Now again you have come back to earth, O glorious one, to safeguard the knowledge of Brahman obstructed by those who are contented with mere spiritual learning. Lord, you have removed many doubts and raised by disciples. May you be pleased to clear this doubt of mine also. O Lord of Munis, are Jnana and Siddhis mutually incompatible, or is there some relation between the two? Thus praised and questioned by me, Bhagavan Ramana looked intently at me and said, "One who is well established in Sahaja Stiti performs by his very nature inviolable tapas day by day. There is no sloth in Sahaja Stiti." Inviolable tapas is nothing but natural, effortless abidance in the self. By such incessant tapas, fresh ripeness comes from moment to moment. By such ripeness, siddhis may in course of time come to the seer, and if prarabdha lies that way, even a jnani may sport such powers. Just as to the sage the world appears as nothing but the self, even so the play of siddhis is regarded by him as nothing other than the self. If prarabdha does not lie that way, the sage, though full of power, is ever still as the waveless ocean. Abiding in his own natural state, he does not go seeking anything else. Abidance in the self is the sum total of all powers. Effortless tapas is termed the Sahaja state. In that state, it is thought, powers arise through ripeness. One firmly established in the self, though surrounded by many, performs awe-inspiring tapas. For him, there is no need of solitude. They know nothing who think that jnana is devoid of power. For a jnani abides in his real state of being, which is the plenitude of power and all-round perfection. End of chapter 11 with 26 verses. Chapter 12, Shakti Vicharam, on Shakti. On the 19th day, the high-minded Bharadwaja Kapali, great among the learned, questioned Guru Ramana. Kapali, O Bhagavan, in the everyday life of both the jnani and the ignorant, one observes the triad, subject, object and cognition. By what special attribute then is a jnani superior to the ignorant one? O Lord, may you be pleased to clear this doubt of mine. Bhagavan, for one to whom the subject is not different from the self, the object and the cognition also do not appear different from the self. For one to whom, owing to attachment, the subject is different from the self, the object and the cognition too appear different from the self. Even in this seeming difference, the jnani perceives the essential unity. The ignorant one, caught in the seeming difference, considers himself as separate. Kapali, Lord, that being in which these differences of triads appear, is it endowed with Shakti or devoid of Shakti? Bhagavan, child, that being wherein these differences of triads appear, is said to be all powerful by those who know Vedanta. Kapali. That divine Shakti of which the Vedantins speak, is it dynamic or static? Bhagavan. Child, it is only because of the movement of Shakti that the worlds come into being. But the reality on which the movement is based never moves. That movement of Shakti, which is based on the immovable reality and which is the cause of the world, the learned terms indefinable Maya. The movement appears as if real to the subject. In reality, there is no movement in being. O best of men, the seeming difference between Ishvara and Shakti arises from dualistic vision. If the vision is withdrawn into the source, the two become one. Kapali. Bhagavan, this activity of Ishvara, which is the cause of this vast universe, is it eternal or not? Please enlighten me. Bhagavan. Though the Supreme moves because of his own Supreme Shakti, he in reality is unmoving. Only the sage can understand this profound mystery. Movement by itself is activity, and activity is called Shakti. The Supreme Person, through his Shakti, created all that we see. Activity is of two kinds: pravritti, manifestation, and nivritti, withdrawal. The Vedic text, where all this has become Atman itself, refers to nivritti. Thus, the word sarvam, all this, refers to the many seen during dualistic vision. The word abhut has become implies some sort of activity. The specific expression Atman itself implies that the multitude of diverse things born of it must in the end be withdrawn into the Atman. O best of men, without Shakti, being is not apprehended. Shakti has two names, Vyapara, activity, and Ashraya, ground. The learned say that work, such as the creation, sustenance, and dissolution of the universe, is Vyapara, activity. O best of men, Ashraya, ground, is nothing other than being. Because being is itself everything, it depends on nothing else. He who understands Shakti as both activity and ground, he alone knows. In the absence of activity, there can be no diversity for Sat, being. If Satta, that is, nature of being, be other than Shakti, then no activity can ever rise. If in the course of time the great dissolution of the universe should occur, this activity merges, as it were, into being without any difference. Without Shakti, none of this activity can ever be. Neither creation nor cognition, consisting of the triad, subject, object, and cognition. The one transcendent Shakti is known by two names, being as ground and activity because of the work of creation. Best of men, to those who consider movement alone to be the mark of Shakti, one has to point out that there exists some supreme reality as the ground. That sole supreme reality is by some called Shakti, by others being, by others Brahman, and by still others person. Purusha. There are two ways, child, in which truth is apprehended. It is defined in terms of its characteristics, and it is directly experienced as reality. Thus, knowledge of being can be had in two ways, through its activity or by experiencing it as such, that is, indirectly through its attributes or directly by being one with it. Being is said to be the ground, my child, the activity its attribute. By understanding through activity, the source of activity, one gets firmly established in the ground. Being goes with attributes, and attributes go with being. The relation between the two, it is said, is one of identity. As being is apprehended only by its attribute, namely activity, it is eternally active. Activity is not other than being. If you see indeed, all this knowledge of difference is but imaginary. This creation called the sport of Shakti is only an idea of Ishvara. If the idea is transcended, being alone remains. End of chapter 12 with 35 verses. Chapter 13. Sannyase Stri Purusha Samavadigara. Women eligible for sannyasa. Light of the moon for the Atreyas, married into the Vasishta line, mother of the unshaken Brahman knower Mahadeva, and ideal wife, and one devoted to the service of the world and the practice of the great Srividya praised by sages, the first guru south of the Vindhyas of the Tara Vidya, my friend in tapas, Vishalakshi of great fame. She submitted through me two questions to sage Ramana, the friend of the universe. If obstacles confront women that abide in the self, does the Shastra sanction their renouncing the home and becoming ascetics? If a woman, liberated while alive, happens to shed her body, what is the proper thing to do, cremation or burial? Bhagavan, the great sage, knower of the import of all the scriptures, listened to the two questions and gave his decision. Since there is no such prohibition in the Shastra, there is nothing wrong in women abiding in the self and fully ripe becoming ascetics. As in Mukti and Jnana, there is no difference between man and woman. The body of a woman liberated during life is not to be cremated, for it is a temple. Whatever evils are said to follow the cremation of the body of a man liberated during life will follow even when the body of a woman liberated during life is cremated. The wise Ramana Maharshi elucidated these points regarding a woman jnani on the 21st day of August 1917. End of chapter 13, 11 verses. Chapter 14, Jeevan Mukti. On the night of the 21st August 1917, wise Bharadwaja Vaidarbha, born in Shivakula family, great among the learned, well-versed in speech, questioned the Maharishi on Jeevan Mukti, and in the hearing of all, the Maharishi replied, Jeevan Mukti is firm abidance in being, unaffected by scriptural or worldly ideas. There are no differences in prajnana, transcendental awareness. Hence, mukti is of one kind only. One liberated while yet in the body is called a Jeevan Mukta. There is no difference between the experience of Jeevan Mukta and that of one who, according to the scriptures, goes to Brahmaloka and gets liberated there. Identical with the experience of the above two is that of the Mahatma whose pranas merge into pure being even here at the time of death. Abidance in the self is the same for all. The destruction of bondage is the same for all. And there is but one kind of mukti. Difference between muktas appear only to the minds of others. O best of men, the Mahatma who abides in the self and gets release while yet alive, his life forces too get absorbed in the self even here. In some cases, owing to ripeness of tapas, the Jivan Mukta may in time attain intangibility while the form remains. With further maturity, even disappearance of form, invisibility ensues. Remaining as pure awareness alone, such a Siddha disports himself as he likes. O best of men, these two Siddhis of the body may come about in a short time through divine grace. Difference in Siddhis does not mean any difference in Mukti. One who abides in the self is a Mukta whether with or without the body. He who ascends to higher worlds through Sushumna Nadi and along the path of Archis gains liberation forthwith by virtue of the enlightenment arising there. To a loving devotee of well-ripened mind, the ascent through the Nadi to the highest goal occurs by grace divine. He can roam at will in all the worlds, assume as many bodies as he likes, and even confer grace on others. Some wise men say Kailasha is the world of the liberated, others Vaikuntha, and yet others the region of the sun. O learned one, like this and other planets, these worlds of the liberated also are projected on being by the marvelous power of Shakti. End of chapter 14, 17 verses. Chapter 15. Sravana Manana Nididhyasana Nirupanam. On Sravana Manana Nididhyasana. O Lord, the best of the line of sages, what is meant by Sravana Manana and Nididhyasana? Thus questioned by me, Sri Bhagavan, the best of the knowers of Brahman, spoke in the gathering of disciples on the morning of the 22nd day of August 1917. Some say that Shravana is listening to the preceptor as he expounds the Vedantic texts with meaning and commentary. Others say that Shravana is also listening to a teacher who knows the Atman, explaining in his own language and words of the nature of being. Having listened to the Vedantic texts or the Guru's own words, or without either, but owing to merit earned in past lives, listening to one's own heart declaring itself as the root of the I-thought, different from the body and mind, this is Shravana in reality. Manana, according to some, is inquiry into the meaning of the Shastras. In reality, it is inquiry into being, the self. Some say that the intellectual conviction of the identity of Brahman and Atman, without doubt or misunderstanding, is Nididhyasana. Mere scriptural knowledge of this identity, however free from doubt or misunderstanding, does not by itself confer experience. O Vasishta, both doubt and misunderstanding are dispelled by experience alone and not by hundreds of scriptures. The scripture dispels the doubt and misunderstanding of one who has faith. When the faith weakens a little, they both reappear. O Vasishta, it is only by experience of being that they are both eradicated once for all. Hence, Firm abidance in being is termed Nididhyasana. When one's mind wanders outside, my child, without firm abidance in being, even the study of hundreds of scriptures cannot confer direct immediate knowledge. O great Kaundinya, if firm abidance in being becomes natural and effortless, this indeed is final freedom and the supreme state and is called direct realization. End of chapter 15, 14 verses. Chapter 16, Bhakti Vicharam, on Bhakti. Then question regarding Bhakti, the best of men, the highly auspicious Bhagavan Ramana Maharishi spoke thus. The self is dear to all. Nothing else is as dear. Love, unbroken like a stream of oil, is termed Bhakti. Through love, the sage knows that God is none other than his own self. Though the devotee, on the other hand, regards him as different from himself, yet he too merges and abides in the self alone. The love which flows unbroken like a stream of oil towards the Supreme Lord leads the mind infallibly into pure being, even without one's desiring it. When the devotee, regarding himself as a separate, limited individual of poor understanding and desirous of deliverance from suffering, takes the omnipresent supreme reality to be some deity and worships it, even then he attains in the end that alone. O best of men, one who attributes names and forms to the deity, through those very names and forms transcends all name and form. When bhakti has grown perfect, then hearing once about reality is enough, for it confers perfect knowledge. Bhakti not continuous like a stream is called intermittent bhakti. Even this is bound to result in supreme bhakti. One who practices bhakti for a desired end finds no fulfillment on attaining it and then again worships God for the sake of eternal happiness. Bhakti, even when accompanied by desire, does not cease with the achievement of the desire. Faith in the Supreme Person develops and goes on increasing. Growing thus, bhakti in course of time becomes perfect. By means of this perfect and supreme bhakti, even as by jnana, one crosses the ocean of becoming. End of chapter 16, 12 verses. Chapter 17, Jnana Prapti Vicharam, on attainment of jnana. On the 25th August 1917, Vaidarbha, best among the learned, bowed humbly before the sage and questioned him again. Vaidarbha: Does jnana come to us gradually, little by little, day by day? Or does it, like the sun, blaze forth all at once in all its fullness? Bhagavan: Jnana does not come gradually, little by little, day by day. It blazes forth all at once in all its fullness when the practice has matured to perfection. Vaidarbha: Bhagavan, during practice the mind goes and comes, in and out. Is the ingoing of the mind called jnana? Bhagavan: O learned one, if the mind, having once gone in, comes out again, it is only practice. For jnana is the experience which never slips away. Vaidarbha: O best of sages, great scholars have mentioned in the scriptures several stages of jnana. How are they to be reconciled? Bhagavan: O wise one, all the stages of jnana mentioned in the scriptures appear even like distinctions in mukti, only to the minds of others. For those who know, jnana is but one. Observing the movements in the jnani's body, senses and mind, which occur according to prarabdha, others imagine the stages. In reality, there are no gradations in jnana. Vaidarbha. Once self-knowledge, the destroyer of all ignorance, has been gained, will it disappear on account of ignorance sprouting again through attachment? Bhagavan. O light of Bharadvaja line, once self-knowledge, the opposite of ignorance, has been attained, it can never be overcome. End of chapter 17, 10 verses. Chapter 18, Siddha Mahimanu Kirtanam, on the glory of the Siddhas. Bhagavan Ramana, born in the great line of Parasara, the son of the immaculate Sundara Pandita, with lovely eyes wide as the lotus petal, bringing renown to the earthly gods. Dweller in Ashrama on Arunachala, steadfast and stainless Paramahamsa, assuming activity out of compassion while ever established in the imperishable Atman. His words dispel all doubt. His glance, like an Ankusha, brings under control the mad elephant of the deluded mind. He is ever active for the happiness of others and utterly indifferent to his body's needs. His body glows like a ripe mango. Absolute master of the fickle senses, he is wedded to the immortal Valli, who is pure awareness. In a few words, he conveys the substance of all scriptures. With his pure effulgent rays, he clears like the sun in due season the dullness of his devotees. He is an inexhaustible mind of auspicious qualities. In speech, he is extremely soft. In look, cool and compassionate. His face is like a full-blown lotus. His mind is a void like the moon in daylight. He shines in the heart as the sun in the sky. Pitiless to his body, strict in the observance of discipline, wholly averse to the delights of the senses, he is a sage without anger or desire, beside himself with the joy of pure awareness. Free from infatuation, greed, distracting thought and envy, he is ever blissful. He is ever active, helping others to cross the sea of relative existence, regardless of reward. When Ganapati said, "Mother is mine," and sat on the lap of Parvati, Kumara retorted, "Never mind, father is mine," and got on to Shiva's lap and was kissed by him on the head. Of this Kumara, who pierced with his lance the Krauncha hill, Ramana is a glorious manifestation. He is the mystic import of the mantra, Om Vasadbhuve Namaha. An ascetic without danda, yet is he Dandapani. He is Taraka for crossing the sea of suffering, yet is he the foe of Taraka. He has renounced Bhava, yet is a constant worshipper of Bhava. He is Hamsa, yet without attachment to Manasa. More imperturbable than the hill of gold, Meru, more unfathomable than the ocean, more patient than the immovable earth, the mother of all, a paragon of self-control, far removed from even the whisper of excitement, spreading grace like the friend of the blue lily, the moon, bright like the lord of the lotus, the sun. By his abidance in Brahman, state of pure being, he reminds one of his father, under the banyan tree, Dakshinamurti, firm like a rock in this my younger brother. Even now, in the thousand-petaled lotus of his head, there shines Devasena, lovely in looks and mind, in the form of auspicious thoughts, and yet he is free from the faintest scent of desire. Though thus he is a householder, he is the king of ascetics. A giver of boons to the devotees, the guru even of the great Ganapati, master of mantras, like the celestial tree, he assuages the anguish of those who seek the shadow of his feet. He is a reincarnation of Kumarila Bhatta, praised by assemblies of scholars, the author of Tantra Vartika, elixir of the Vedas, brilliant with various ingenious ideas. In this birth, however, he elucidates the teachings of Vedanta alone. He is the master who composed Arunachala Pancharatna, five gems on Arunachala, the quintessence of Vedantic utterances, brief like sutras, but all comprehensive and filled with hidden meaning. Though not at all trained in the language of the gods, Sanskrit, and unacquainted with poetry, he is yet the author of works wherein crowds of brilliant ideas trail behind the inspired expression. Again, this boundless genius is another advent of the master poet, the twice-born Tamil child, Jnana Sambandha, who, drinking the breast milk of the mother of the universe, sang in dancing tunes the praises of Shiva. This is the third appearance here on the earth of the god, Subrahmanya, who pierced of yore the Krauncha hill, and now he has come to quell the darkness of mere logic by providing a living example of abidance in Brahman, pure being. He is a poet of renown in Tamil, the language adored by Agastya and other sages. The eternal light supreme he beheld with his own inner light, unaided by a guru. In a boy, a dull cowherd, a monkey or a dog, a knave, a scholar or a devotee, everywhere he beholds the same being and is without the least partiality. Full of power, yet full of peace, full of devotion, yet without a sense of difference, free from likes, yet loving all the world, God manifest, yet in conduct humble. Writing down the message, this goes to the presence of the Father, let no search be made for me. He left home and arrived at the foot of Arunachala. Of Bhagavan Ramana, thus happily endowed with a wealth of auspicious qualities, Amritanatha Yathindra humbly inquired concerning the boundless glory of Siddhas. To him, Sri Bhagavan, dweller on the holy hill Arunachala, replied, "The glory of Siddhas is beyond imagination. They are equal to Shiva. Indeed, they are the very forms of Shiva. They have the power to grant every prayer." End of chapter 18, 26 verses. Anubandham 1. Mantrodharam, enunciation of the mantra. In the 18th chapter, the 10th verse, Om Vachadbhuve Namaha, that is, the Lord Ramana is the mystic import of the mantra Om Vachadbhuve Namaha, is explained here. He is the secret sense of the group of words arrived by uttering the Om Vachadbhuve and the suffix Namaha. Vedadi, the beginning of the Vedas, Pranava, Omkara, Pakadamana, the subjugator of the Asura, Paka, that is Indra, representing the letter La, Uttara, the letter next to it, is the list of alphabets, that is Va. Kachapesha Rudra, in the form of the Lord of the Turtles, his seed letter is Cha. With these letters, Om Va Cha. Dharadhara Mountain, the letter Da, Sushupti, the power of deep sleep, the letter Ba, Amareshwara, the Lord of the Immortals, Rudra in this name, his seed letter is U. So, Vachat Bu, Bu, joining these Sukshmartha, the Shakti having this name, the letter Ve, Vachat Bu Ve, Yuk joining this with Amrutena Nectar, the letter Va, that is Ve, Pranati, salutation, that is Namaha. By joining all these letters, we arrive at the group of letters Om Vachat Bhuve Namaha. This group of letters forms the mantra. Its secret sense known to the learned expresses the meaning Ramana, who is the form of the deity invoked by this mantra. Who is this God who is expressed in this mantra? Subrahmanya, who is born from fire. How? Om Vachat Bhuve Namaha. Omkara is the Supreme Brahman. The word is indeclinable and so it will make sense with all the case endings. Vachat Bhu, the field that creates, releases the word, the fire. The fire became the word and entered the mouth. So explains the scripture. Born from the God who presides over speech is Vachat Bhu. Born from fire, Kumara, salutations to him. This is not physical fire, but the effulgence of the word. In order to drive home these, in the mantra, Agni is denoted by the word Vachat. It is the tradition of the Tantra Shastra to expound the mantra by using words of similar sense. Following this, the master has expounded the mantra of Subrahmanya. The author of this work, our master, has been praising the Maharishi Ramana as one born out of a portion of Kumara, Subrahmanya. And so, the meaning of the mantra is to be Ramana. English rendering of this mantrodharam is by S. Shankara Narayana. Anubandham to Arunachala Pancharatnam. In chapter 18, verse 17, this Arunachala Pancharatnam is referred as the composition of Bhagavan Ramana Maharshi, though he was not at all learned in the language of God's Sanskrit. The translation of Arunachala Pancharatna is as follows. Ocean of the nectar, full of grace, engulfing the universe in thy splendor, O Arunachala, the Supreme Itself, be thou the sun and open the lotus of my heart in bliss. Karuna Purna Sudhabhe Kabhalita Ghana Vishwarupa Kiranavalya Arunachala Paramatman Aruno Bhava Chitta Ganja Suvigasaye. O Arunachala, in thee the picture of the universe is formed, has its stay and is dissolved. This is the sublime truth. Thou art the inner self who dancest in the heart as I. Heart is thy name, O Lord.
त्वय्यरुणाचल सर्वं भूत्वा स्थित्वा प्रलीनमेतश्चित्रम् हृद्यहमित्यात्मतया नृत्यसि भोस्ते वदन्ति हृदयं नाम.
He who turns inward with untroubled mind to search where the consciousness of I arises, realizes the self and rests in thee, O Arunachala, like a river when it joins the ocean.
Ahamiti kutayati janvishyanta pravishtayatyamaladhiya avagamya swam rupam samyatyarunachalat.
For abandoning the outer world, with mind and breath controlled, to meditate on thee within, the yogi sees thy light, O Arunachala, and finds his delight in thee.
Tyaktva vishayam bahyam ruddha pranena ruddha manasantastvam ध्यायन् पश्यति योगी धीदितिम् अरुणाचल त्वयि महीयन्ते.
5. He who dedicates the mind to thee and seeing thee always beholds the universe as thy figure. He who at all times glorifies thee and loves thee as none other than the self, he is the master without rival, being one with thee, O Arunachala, and lost in thy bliss.
Tvayarpita manasatvam pashyan sarvam tavakrititaya satatam bhajate nanyah pritya sajayatyarunachala tvayi sukhe magna.
These 5 verses in which Sri Ramana Maharshi has revealed the greatness of Arunachala in the divine tongue of Sanskrit in the Arya meter are verily a jewel of Upanishad.
Sri Madramana Maharsher Dharshanam Arunachalasya Devagira Panchakamarya Ghetauratnam Ditama Upanishadam Hi.
Om Namo Bhagavate Sri Ramanaya Sarvam Sri Ramanarpanamastu.